Thank you very much, Lavrov, for the invitation. Again, I was very sad, but 2 years ago, I there was this black ice. I didn't even know what black ice was. I had to Google it, you know, on the morning of the day of my colloquium. And unfortunately, I had another important meeting at MIT the following day, so I really couldn't stay. But so I'm glad I'm able to give the talk, a colloquium today. And I hope I will still be able to visit in person, you know, when circumstances allow it. So thank you again very much to Latham and all of you for being here. So as Latham mentioned, you know, I want to tell you about the magic of Moiré quantum matter. And this is something which is a relatively recent area of condensed matter physics. But now before I go to Moiré quantum matter, let me start from a more generic perspective, you know, more general perspective. You know, among the most fascinating states of matter that we have in the universe are those where the interaction between individual constituents are very strong. This is something that happens in all, you know, areas of physics. For example, one strongly correlated state of matter is the quark gluon plasma, where, you know, it's a state of matter that occurs a few hundred nanoseconds or microseconds after the Big Bang, and that we can recreate nowadays in heavy ion collisions, such as these at Brookhaven National Laboratory. If you think about, you know, neutron stars, the different phases of nuclear matter in neutron stars are also strongly correlated. This is a picture from the Chandra X-ray Observatory of the neutron star. And if you go to Wikipedia, you know, you can read about these phases, which are called nuclear pasta. So they have very interesting names, the Bucatini phase, the spaghetti phase, the lasagna phase. And as usual, the astrophysicists are very creative at naming things. And perhaps closer to, you know, my heart is the different topological states of matter that we can realize. For example, if you have a two-dimensional system of electrons and you apply a large perpendicular magnetic field, you can enter different fractional quantum Hall phases where, due to the strong interactions between electrons, you have excitations with fractionalized charges and also with very interesting topological properties. Now, if we zoom in a little bit more now into the field of strongly correlated quantum materials, this includes large classes and families of materials. Perhaps the one that has been most investigated are the high temperature cuprate superconductors, where in a phase diagram of, you know, temperature here on this vertical axis versus Doppler charge density in the bottom axis, we have a variety of phases, you know, a few of which we have a good understanding even to this day, despite decades of research. Now, before I tell you more about quantum materials and Moiré quantum matter, let me just, you know, so that everybody's on the same page, given that this is a general talk, let me remind you what we know, you know, what quantum mechanics tells us about the electronic properties of materials, okay? So if you start with single particle band theory, okay, there are pretty much, consider thought, there are only two situations, you know, materials are either insulators or metals. So let's imagine that we have here a material which has a density of states as a function of energy, which includes these two bands, okay? And one of these bands is completely full with electrons and the other band is completely empty, okay? And there's a band gap in between. This material is an insulator, okay? And the reason is that there are no free available energy states, you know, for the electrons to conduct when you apply a small bias voltage or a small temperature. Okay, so all the electrons are stuck in this band and it cannot conduct electricity. On the other hand, if you have a material where, you know, same density of states, two bands, same band gap, but now one of the bands is partially occupied, for example, your Fermi energy is here in the middle of this band, then there are at infinitesimally low energies, there are available free states for the electrons to get excited to, you know, via temperature or via a bias voltage. And therefore, this material can conduct electricity and it's a metal, okay? And that's what you get in single particle physics to zeroth order. Now, an interesting situation can occur when now you include interactions between your electrons, okay? You can be in a situation which is similar to this one, where a material has these two bands and let's say the Fermi energy is in the middle of one of these bands, but now due to strong interactions between your electrons, you can do the following, okay? This band, which was half occupied, splits into two bands, and because your Fermi energy was at, you know, half of this band, one of these split bands gets completely occupied and the other one becomes completely empty. and there's a correlated gap that appears, you know, that splits these two bands. So it's a situation which is now reminiscent of the single particle insulator, except that this gap is not a single particle band gap, but it's a correlated gap, okay? And these materials, we call them correlated insulators, okay? So you see, as you include interactions between electrons, you can have other types of behavior. Now, there are, you know, many types of, you know, correlated insulators. One which is particularly famous is the MOT insulator, which is the parent compound of the high-temperature coupled superconductors. Yeah? In these high-temperature coupled superconductors, the main character is this copper-oxygen plane, where you have, you know, one electron per copper atom, okay? You could have up to two per copper atom, but you have only one. So in that sense, the system is half filled, has a band which is half filled. Now, due to strong interactions, a strong Coulomb repulsion between these electrons, all of the electrons are stuck in their positions, okay? So the material is an insulator. Now, an interesting dynamic happens when you remove a few of these electrons or you dot with holes. Now, because there are some empty sites, these electrons can actually jump from atom to atom, okay? But they have to do that in a correlated fashion. And it turns out, okay, that this correlated fashion gives rise to interesting phenomena such as superconductivity. Now, this interesting game is believed to be described by a model, you know, due to John Hubbard. It's called the Hubbard model. We believe it captures the essential physics in this problem, you know, of the superconductivity in high temperature coupled superconductors. This model includes this Coulomb repulsion, this charging energy to occupy one site W, and then the tunneling, which allows you to tunnel between, you know, sites which are, you know, with nearby empty sites. And I say we believe it captures that essential, you know, physics because we do not know actually to this day, you know, we cannot solve theoretically this Hubbard model analytically, okay? And this means that we don't really know how to go from here, to each of these phases. And this is despite, you know, 30 plus years of research into this matter, into this problem. Now, these difficulties in trying to understand the physics of strongly correlated systems has led to alternative approaches to see if we can gain further insight, you know, since theoretically this is very complicated. And one of the most successful approaches is that of trying to investigate strongly correlated quantum materials or quantum systems using ultra-cold atoms in optical lattices, okay? So already, you know, back in 2002, you know, the group of Immanuel Bloch, you know, was able to realize, you know, if you shine, you know, two sets of lasers, you know, you can realize this periodic potential for atoms. And in the atomic physics community, there's a knob that you can dial, that you can tune to change the interaction between these atoms, okay? And as a result, you could here, you know, go between a superfluid and a MOT insulator phase, you know, by tuning that knob. This was done with bosonic atoms, so atoms with integer spin. So this was a realization of the Bose-Hubbard model. A few years later, the community was able to do this with fermionic atoms. So this was a Fermi-Hubbard model realization. And then, just to give you an idea of the state of the art, as of a few years ago, people have been able to realize antiferromagnetism in the Fermi-Hubbard model, okay? Meaning you can put these atoms into this lattice and you can see that they order in a spin-up, spin-down over short ranges. So this means that the cold atom community is starting to explore this corner of this phase diagram. Yeah, they would like to explore the entire phase diagram and in particular reach this region where you can have D-wave superfluidity due to repulsive interactions. However, in order to do that, they still have to cool down quite a bit, you know, about an order of magnitude, they have to go down in temperature in order to reach this region, they believe, okay? And while there's no fundamental obstacle to realizing this, it's a very serious technical challenge that has, you know, that is making progress, you know, steady, but slow. So we have these two, you know, sort of traditional platforms to investigate strongly correlated, you know, systems. One is the quantum materials themselves, you know, where the typical lattice scale is atomic dimensions, so a few angstroms. The other one is this cold atoms in optical lattices, where the typical length scale, the distance between these atoms is now about a micron. And what I want to tell you about today is about this new platform, Moray Quantum Matter. And you know, it started with Magic Angle Graphene, but it's a more generic platform now, where the typical Moray length is of the order of 10 nanometers. So as you can see, it's conveniently a couple of orders of magnitude from either of these other platforms, which means this is a very nice and complementary platform to these other two. Associated with these length scales are energy scales or temperature scales. So in quantum materials, the typical temperature scale is of the order of 100 to 1,000 Kelvin. In cold atoms, it's 0.1 to 1 nanokelvin. And because we are now at an intermediate length scale, we're also at an intermediate temperature scale of 1 to 10 Kelvin, which is a convenient temperature in order to, you know, to explore in cryostats in solid-state physics laboratories. Now, with this introduction, this is what I want to be telling you about today. I'll start by reminding you about, you know, 2D materials, you know, Legoland, Twistronics, something you may have heard, you know. Then I'll tell you about graphene, and in particular, magic angle graphene superlattices. Then I will tell you about our observation of correlated insulator behaviors and superconductivity in magic angle graphene. And then I'll tell you about what has happened since our discovery, a little bit of the latest and some outlook. Okay, so for the past, you know, 15 years, a bit longer, we have been having, you know, a lot of fun investigating two-dimensional materials. You know, it started with the isolation of graphene, but then quickly we started to look at many other two-dimensional materials. And the community realized quite quickly that, you know, studying each of them individually is great and very interesting, but things can become even more interesting if you put them on top of each other, okay? And in the 2D materials community, we do not have the constraints of chemistry or lattice mismatch that you find, for example, when you grow semiconductor heterostructures with molecular beam epitaxy or things like this. So you could put just anything on top of anything. And that was very nice. And that led to my friends and colleagues to write these review papers about how, you know, to the materials, you can make analogies with Lego pieces so that you can stack them on top of each other. Now, you know, I don't know how many of you play with Lego. I have small kids, so I play with Lego all the time. And sometimes, you know, my kids come and tell me, "Daddy, I cannot, you know, stack this piece of Lego on top of another." And I have to tell them, "Look, that's because you have to rotate the two pieces and have them perfectly aligned in order to stack them on top of each other." So, although this, you know, Lego, you know, analogy of 2D materials is a pretty important aspect of 2D materials and relatively unique, is perhaps not the most unique aspect of 2D materials, because there, again, this analogy with semiconductor heterostructures. I think that the most unique aspect of 2D materials, something that has no precedent in the history of material science, is the fact that we can do this. We can stack two-dimensional crystals on top of each other with an arbitrary angle of rotation between the two, anything that we want, you know. 50 degrees, 33 degrees, 1.1 degrees, why not? I'll show you in a moment, okay? And this, you know, the properties of the two materials that we stack on top of each other with an angle can be dramatically modified, the optical, electronic, and mechanical properties, as I will show you, okay? This is a non-equilibrium state of matter, okay, that we're able to achieve because we have control over these two-dimensional materials. Now, let me tell you a little bit about graphene and then what are magic angle graphene superlattices. So graphene, I think probably you've had a number of talks about graphene. Graphene is a honeycomb of carbon atoms. Now, all of these atoms are chemically equivalent, they're all carbon. However, from the crystallographic point of view, they are inequivalent. We need two atoms, in a two-atom basis in addition to two unit vectors in order to tile a honeycomb. Okay, and we call these the A and B sublattices, or the red and green balls in this drawing. Now, you can calculate the electronic structure of electrons in graphene, okay, energy versus momentum in the two-dimensional plane, Kx and Ky. And graphene is, you know, infamous for having this very unusual electronic structure where near the Fermi energy, near charge neutrality, you have this linear energy momentum dispersion, which looks more typical of, you know, photons than of electrons in a material, okay? Typically you have a quadratic energy momentum dispersion, but in graphene it's linear, okay? These are called the Dirac cones or Dirac cones, and this is typically called the Dirac point. Now, This energy momentum dispersion can be captured in this Hamiltonian equation. Okay, you have linear energy momentum. And this is nothing else but the Dirac equation in two dimensions for massless particles. Okay, where in the Dirac equation, usually we have here a spinor, which tells you whether the spin of the electron is up or down. Here, in this case of graphene, this is a pseudo spinor, which tells you whether the weight of the electron wave function is on the A type of atoms or on the B type of atoms. Okay, now this is the only formula I think I'm going to have in the entire talk, so don't worry. Now, the only other thing that I need to, you need to know about graphene is that there are two inequivalent valleys, okay, or these double Dirac cones, we call them valleys. They're at the K and K prime point. The others are just copies by reciprocal space lattice vectors. So we say that electrons in graphene have a four-fold degeneracy. It can be spin up, spin down, valley K prime, okay? So just remember number four. It's going to appear later on in the talk. Now, what happens when you put graphene on top of a graphene and you twist the angle, okay? You change the angle. A moiré pattern forms where the moiré wavelength, the distance between these soccer balls that you see in the screen, okay, is sort of inversely proportional to the angle, at least for small angles, okay? Now, let me stop this before you get too dizzy. So what happens, you know, that's what happens in real space, okay? Now let's look at what happens in momentum space and therefore what happens also to the electronic structure. So this is the graphene band structure. This is a real space graphene, a Dirac cone. And this is the receipt, you know, this is the first Brillouin zone, okay? And you have, if you have some finite, you know, Fermi energy, you have a Fermi disk here located at the K and K prime points, okay? Only two of them are inequivalent. The other are just copies. So if we place now another graphene sheet in real space, perfectly aligned to this one, the reciprocal spaces are also aligned, okay? And the Dirac cones, therefore, sit on top of each other. Now, if we rotate in real space, the reciprocal spaces also rotate, okay? So twisting leads to layered Dirac cones separating in momentum space, okay? Well, the separation is proportional to the sine of half the angle, yeah? And this was already investigated theoretically a long time ago. Now, let's start from a small angle of rotation, so that the separation in momentum space is proportional to the angle, okay? And let's see what happens. So this would be the situation for small angles, so that the separation between the Dirac points is proportional to the angle. This would be the situation that would occur if electrons in one graphene sheet didn't know that the other graphene sheet exists. Yeah? Now, however, because these two graphene sheets, when we place them on top of each other, are only 3 angstroms apart, electrons are very much aware that they can tunnel between the two sheets, okay? And that leads to this bond repulsion, okay? Basically, you have bonding antibonding states similar to a hydrogen molecule, but in this case, it's a giant graphene molecule, okay? And these bonding antibonding states open this gap here at the crossing point, okay? Now, this interlayer tunnel, interlayer interaction, this for this drawing is much smaller than the absolute value, you know, that the energy of that crossing point. You can see that one of the bands gets pushed down in energy, the other one gets pushed up. If you now decrease the twist angle, okay, these two Dirac points get closer and closer, and its bands gets pushed down to lower and lower energy until it touches zero, okay? At that point, we say that a flat band condition has been reached, okay? This depends on the value of that interlayer tunneling. And that flat band condition is reached at the magic angle, which for graphene on top of graphene was calculated to be 1.1 degrees. Yeah? This is something that was theoretically predicted, you know, about a decade from now. And there were also interesting single particle physics experiments, scanning tunneling microscopy measurements by the group of Eva Andre that investigated the single particle physics. Now, this is sort of a cartoon. This is an actual calculation of those flat bands, energy versus momentum, okay? You can see that there are these flat bands. They're not 100% flat. They have a little bit of dispersion, but they're orders of magnitude flatter than the original massless Dirac fermion graphene dispersion, okay? These are remote bands, set of moiré mini bands that appear. Now, if you wanna, you know, go now to real space and ask, okay, so let's imagine we make that structure. Where do the electrons like to be, okay? Flat in momentum space means highly localized in real space. Okay, to go from momentum space to real space, you have to do a Fourier transform. So the Fourier transform of a flat thin is a highly picked thin. Okay? So if you actually calculate, if you place electrons in these flat bands, where do they like to sit? Turns out they like to sit in regions where locally all of the carbon atoms are on top of all of the other carbon atoms, you know, between the two layers, okay? Regions of AA stacking. And these regions are tunnel coupled via regions where the registry of the carbon atoms, because of the small angle, is shifts, and it's of AB stacking or BA stacking, okay? Where the A carbon atoms in one layer sit underneath the B atoms on the other, and vice versa, okay? So from the top, you know, magic angle graphene looks like this schematically. You have these AA regions where the electrons like to sit. These are separated by AB and BA regions, okay? In a slightly more realistic schematic, these are, you know, this twisted bilayer graphene. You have these yellow regions, which are the regions of AA stacking. These yellow balls here are separated by about 13 nanometers, okay? So this is going to form our triangular Fermi-Hubbard lattice, okay? I put triangular in quotes because in reality, the AB and BA regions are not identical. So this is actually a honeycomb structure. Now, let me start showing you some of the things that we did with this type of samples. So the device geometry that we have is the following. We have our twisted bilayer graphene. It's encapsulated between two dielectrics called hexagonal boron nitride. These are just very nice dielectrics for the twisted bilayer graphene to be embedded in. We can contact with the source and drain electrodes so that we can apply a voltage and measure the current that flows through the twisted bilayer graphene. In addition, we have a parallel plate metallic electrode, you know, parallel to the twisted bilayer graphene, so that we have a field effect transistor geometry. By applying a voltage to this gate electrode, we can vary the charge density in the twisted bilayer graphene electrically, okay? Now, before I show you actual data to magic and graphene, let me remind you of how does the conductivity of regular graphene, monolayer graphene, look like, okay? So if you measure the conductivity of graphene versus charge density, if your Fermi energy is deep in the valence band, you have lots of holes, so the system conducts really well. If your Fermi energy is deep in the conduction band, you have lots of electrons, so you conduct very well. And if your charge, your Fermi energy is at the Dirac point, you have very few charge carriers, so you conduct poorly. So your conductivity of graphene versus, you know, charge density has this V shape, and this has been measured by thousands of groups, okay? Now let me show you how it looks like for magic angle graphene. So these are data of the conductance or conductivity versus charge density for a magic angle twisted bilayer graphene device. You can see that near charge neutrality, we still have this V-shaped conductance. The system remembers that it comes from graphene, okay? However, you see that there's a lot of other stuff, okay? So what does this correspond to? Well, turns out in these flat bands, we can fit up to, you know, we can fit from bottom to top 8 electrons per moire unit cell, okay? That means from charge neutrality, I can fill 4 holes, I get to the bottom of the valence band, or 4 electrons, I get to the top of the conduction band, okay? So if my chemical potential, if I shift, you know, with my gate electrode, my chemical potential such that it lands here, meaning I have filled 4 holes per moire unit cell, my chemical potential will be in the middle of a single particle band gap. That's why I have 0 conductance here. Okay, that happens when I charge the system with 4 holes per moire unit cell. It's a single particle insulator. The same thing happens if I shift the chemical potential to here, the middle of this single particle insulator, for which I need to add 4 electrons per moire unit cell. Yeah? Now, an interesting thing happens when you put your chemical potential here in the middle of the valence band, okay? We are at 2 holes per moire unit cell. Fermi energy is in the middle of a band. The system should be a very good metal, and instead, the system is an insulator, okay? And the same thing happens if you put 2 electrons per moire unit cell. The system should be a good metal, very nicely conducting metal, and instead, is an insulator. These states that occur at 2 electrons and 2 holes per moire unit cell are correlated insulator states. Okay? They should not be insulating, but they are, okay? Now, this type of behavior is only seen around a very narrow angular range around this 1.1 degrees, okay? These are just some. Typically, we see this behavior between about 1 and 1.2 degrees, maybe 0.95 and 1.25 if you push me, okay? So it's clearly related to these flat bands, you know, that occur near the magic angle. Now, let me tell you, some more. So when we were looking at these data, these were data that were taken in a two-terminal device geometry, okay? Because we were originally looking for insulators, not of the type we found, the different ones, but it doesn't matter. We were looking for insulator states, we were making two-terminal measurements. And if you're making a two-terminal measurement, you always have some series resistance with your electrodes. But if you're going to measure an insulator, which means infinite resistance, you don't care if you have an additional series resistance. Infinite plus something is infinite, right? So when we were looking at the temperature dependence of these insulating states, we observed the following. Around this region of 2 electrons per mole unit cell, we saw that the colder the temperature, as we went from 1.7 Kelvin to 0.3 Kelvin, the system conducted less. That's what you expect from an insulator, so that's fine. Now, when we were looking around 2 holes per mole unit cell, right there at 2 holes per mole unit cell, we also noticed that the system conducted less the colder it got. So perfectly consistent with an insulator behavior. However, if we added a few more holes to the system, conducted more the lower the temperature became. So that conductance enhancement was very strange, okay? So I told my students, let's see how good does that thing want to conduct, okay? And for that, we needed to change to a 4-terminal geometry device, a device where we can pass a current and measure through inner voltage contacts the intrinsic dissipation in the device, okay? Other than that, the rest is the same, also gate voltage, etc. Okay? So we made these 4-terminal devices. Now we first, so this is a new device, 1.16 degrees. We first characterized it in a 2-terminal. So here you're looking at the 2-terminal conductance, okay? And also at finite perpendicular magnetic field. As you can see, there is this V-shape near charge neutrality. Then you have insulator at 4 electrons and 4 holes per mole unit cell. You have this deep inconductance also at 2 holes and 2 electrons per mole unit cell. You have also stuff at 3, for example. Okay, there's a lot of stuff that I'm not, telling you about. Let's focus on distance. Now, if you remove the magnetic field, okay, you see that not too much happens here, but something very dramatic happens here. Okay, now we switch to our 4-terminal geometry, okay, which we can do in the same device. And lo and behold, magic angle twisted by Lady Graphene superconducts, okay? You measure the resistance versus temperature. It exhibits a drop at low temperatures below, to zero, below our noise measurement floor. These are data for 2 devices. We have many, many more devices now, okay? So magic angle twisted by Lady Graphene is a 2-dimensional superconductor. Now you can do any test of 2-dimensional superconductivity that you want. For example, you can, bias a finite current bias, you can see that there is 0 voltage dissipation and there is an abrupt switch to a dissipative state. You can do temperature dependent of this. You can explore Berezovsky-Costa-Lithaunis transition. Anything that you want to do, this is a good 2-dimensional superconductor, okay? Now, in particular, as I told you earlier, something which is very interesting is that we can vary the charge density electrically, okay? So this is an electrically tunable superconductor. Now we're talking, there are very few of those, okay? So if you measure the resistance as a function of charge density and temperature near this region of 2 holes per mole unit cell, you can see at 2 holes, you have this correlated insulator state, and then you add a few extra holes and you have a superconducting dome. You add a few electrons and you have another superconducting dome, okay? So when my students show me this data, I was, really fascinated because it reminded me immediately of the hundreds and hundreds of times that I have seen phase diagrams such as these, okay? This is temperature versus dopant concentration for the high temperature Cooper superconductor families, okay? Now, they get this electron hole doping axis wrong. Let me flip them for you. Okay, here we go, correct. Now, at 0 dopant concentration means 1 electron per copper atom, Okay, as I mentioned earlier, this is a correlated MOT insulator. In our case, 2 holes per mole unit cell. Okay, we have a correlated insulating behavior. If you have hole doping here, you have a big superconducting dome. If you add electrons, you have a smaller superconducting dome. Something very similar happens here. Okay, now there are, you know, the big difference between this and this is that this is a theoretical phase diagram. Okay, in order to populate this with real experimental data, you have to grow hundreds of crystals with different chemical composition, often with different chemical, you know, families, you know, formulas, because you cannot grow every material at all doping concentrations. Okay, so this is something that takes hundreds and hundreds of crystals and then growths and to measure all of this. Here, I can go from this side to this side in 10 seconds just by dialing a knob on a voltage source. Okay, I can do all of this in one cooldown in a single disorder realization. Now, I should mention that although there are many similarities, there are many differences also between the system, and to what extent, you know, one can learn in this system about this or not, you know, we're still, the community is still trying to figure out. Now, I should mention also that, you know, this is data for another device. More often than not, we have a very asymmetric dome, you know, the much bigger the superconducting dome for holes than that for electrons. Okay, it's very asymmetric. This is sort of the most symmetric we have seen it. Okay, now our maximum TC is of, you know, in this original data was about 1.7 Kelvin. By now, it's about 3 Kelvin is our maximum TC. Now, how strong a superconductor is magic angle twisted by layer graphene? Okay, so on one hand, you know, I told you maximum TC is of the order of, you know, a couple of Kelvin. What's the big deal? You know, the cuprates have, you know, 100 Kelvin and more. Okay, now the way physicists compare super, you know, how strong our superconductors are is not really through the absolute value of the critical temperature. That's, you know, that's very important if nothing else for applications, right? But the proper way of comparing the strength of superconductors is by asking how high is the critical temperature given how many electrons the system has that could contribute to that superconductivity. Okay. And that's something which is typically shown in this log-log plot of critical temperature versus Fermi temperature, which is the same as charge density normalized by some factors. Okay. Now, this is something which is called Uemura plot. And in this plot, conventional weak coupling BCS superconductors, they tend to be sort of in this corner. Okay. For example, aluminum has a TC of about 1 Kelvin, similar to magic angle graphene. It has a Fermi temperature of over 100,000 Kelvin. It has a gigantic amount of electrons, a gigantic electron density. So given how many electrons aluminum has, it superconducts relatively modestly, okay? The more you go diagonally towards this purple band, okay, the more and more exotic superconductivity tends to be. Particularly in this purple band is where most of the unconventional superconductors exist, lie, okay? You can see here the cuprates, here the nictites, here some of the organics, here the heavy fermions. I even included one, you know, a few data points here from, you know, cold atoms with both axes multiplied by 100 million so that they appear here. But in terms of the coupling strength, they are among, you know, the strongest coupled systems that we have, okay? Now, very close to the BCS crossover in three dimensions. Now, where is magic angle graphene? Okay, magic angle twisted by layer graphene is there. Okay? It's one of the most strongly coupled superconducting systems that we have. In particular, the TC, as I mentioned, you know, in this data was about 1.7 Kelvin, but you can see it has many orders of magnitude smaller Fermi temperature than aluminum, okay? Given the very, very, very low charge density that magic angle graphene has, again, because it's a Moray system with a very large unit cell, okay, 10 nanometers, given how low the charge density is, it superconducts extraordinarily strongly. Okay. If the cuprate superconductors had the coupling of magic angle graphene, they would be room temperature superconductors. Okay. Now, so, you know, there are many, many questions that the community is trying to answer, okay? In particular, what is the origin of the correlated insulated state and what is the superconducting order parameter? So now we, you know, we published our paper in when we posted our paper in March 2018, and you know, this is a small selection of the papers that appear within a few weeks of us posting the paper. Okay, by now that list has actually 700,000 papers, as Latham mentioned. Now, I'm not going to go, you know, the first paper was by Senke Shu and Leon Balance, which proposed a D plus ID cuddle topological state, you know, and basically they opened the floodgates. You know, you can find here all kinds of order parameters with all letters of the alphabet, you know, S, P, D, F, S plus P, D plus ID, S plus P plus D, you know, you name it, you know, all kinds of things have been proposed. I let you look at all of those papers and more. You know, I only want to mention the second paper, you know, the second paper here by Gregory Bolovic, who is a condensed matter theorist working in Finland. You know, he sent us an email, you know, that said, you know, Pablo, finally you have realized everything I predicted theoretically, you know, which you know, which is fun. We, you know, believe it or not, that's not the interesting thing. We get a lot of emails like that from theorists, you know. But what Bolovic said in this paper is, look, a few years ago, so I think in 2013 or so, Bolovic wrote a paper trying to explain the following. For many decades, going back to the 50s or 60s, about one or two experiments per decade appears, you know, it's published where they claim that there is very high temperature superconductivity, including in some cases room temperature in graphite. Now, Bolovic said, although these reports, you know, are largely unconfirmed and the data are not very clear, this is too many reports just to ignore, you know, going back to the 60s. So let me tell you what's going on. What happens is, in these systems, you know, the graphite that was used for those experiments was turbostratic graphite. Graphite where there are small angular misalignments between the graphene sheets that make the graphite. Those small angular misalignments are going to lead to flat bands and to strongly correlated superconductivity. And that's why you get very high temperature superconductivity in those systems. So in this paper, Bolovic said, finally, someone has done a well-controlled experiment using two graphene sheets, the experiment that we did. You see, you have flat bands. You see, you have strongly coupled superconductivity. Now, just get a few more on top and get to room temperature. Come on, get working, okay? So this was, you know, believe it or not, we, you know, we as well as other people are slowly taking steps towards that, and we'll see what happens. Okay, I don't know if those experiments in graphite are okay or not. I used to think they were almost crazy, but now I think that, who knows, maybe there is something there. So, okay, let me tell you a little bit. So we posted the paper in March. The paper was officially published in April, you know, 2018. We announced the discovery at the APS March meeting in 2018. What has happened experimentally since then? Yeah. So the first thing that has happened is that we have reproduced our own results many times. That's, you know, that's good. It doesn't always happen, so it's very good when it happens, okay? So we have a lot more, you know, data, a lot more devices. Actually, this slide is quite old. By now we have dozens of these devices, okay? And we're starting even, you know, we're starting to get enough statistics to build diagrams of TC at optimal doping versus twist angle. So this is a superconducting dome, but versus twist angle, okay? We were never able to do such a thing for any material, you know. This was not a parameter in any, you know, previous materials science. Now, the second thing that happened is much, you know, better than you reproducing your own results is when other people completely independently reproduce your results, okay? So by now, many groups have independently reproduced our results and extended them to other systems and in very interesting directions, okay? So the first group that reproduced our results was a collaboration between a group of Andrea Young at UC Santa Barbara and Corey Dean at Columbia University. They were able to first reproduce our results and then tune the superconductivity by applying pressure. That was very interesting. Then the group of Dmitry Efetov, a little bit later, showed that you can obtain more superconducting domes in some very high quality, you know, device. By now, this robust superconductivity in magic angle twisted valley graphene has been reproduced by about a dozen of experimental groups, and many more are, you know, keep adding to the community. Yeah. Now, we have been able to discover very interesting types of traditional correlated behaviors in these more quantum matter systems, in particular in magic angle twisted bilayer film. For example, linear resistivity versus temperature behavior, which is very reminiscent of the strange metal phase, including coefficients which are consistent with Planckian dissipation, anisotropies in the critical parallel magnetic fields, which indicate that the superconducting state is nematic. It means it spontaneously breaks lattice rotational symmetry, which probably means an exotic type of superconductivity. We have discovered several other twisted correlated systems. The first one was magic angle twisted bilayer graphene. So now this is a bilayer graphene with 0 degree angle. Another one with 0 degree angle, the same as in graphite, but just two layers. And then we place these two bilayers on top of each other, rotated by a magic angle. That's an interesting correlated system with interesting magnetic properties. It's not superconducting, but it's very interesting also. We have, many groups have started to investigate with scanning probe microscopy at the microscopic level what's going on with this structure. Okay, we have interesting scanning tunneling microscopy studies, scanning nanosquid studies, scanning single electron transistor studies, scanning optical probe studies. Okay, so we know a lot more about how does it look microscopically. And one of the most interesting developments was the discovery of ferromagnetism, anomalous Hall effect, and even quantum anomalous Hall physics in the system, which means that topology plays a fundamental role in the physics of magic angle twisted bilayer graphene and related systems. Okay, so in fact, this field of correlated Moore heterostructures or Moore quantum matter has meant the merging of several modern condensed matter physics community. Okay? On one hand, you have 2D van der Waals materials and heterostructures, people that did investigated graphene and other 2D materials like myself. You have people also that investigated more traditional strongly correlated materials, such as cuprates or nictites, etc. And then people that do topological condensed matter physics, quantum Hall physics, topological insulators, topological Weissmann metals, etc. Okay, all of these three communities come together in this correlated Moore heterostructures or Moore quantum matter. Now, shortly after our discovery, we together with our theory collaborators, we predicted that there would be nearly flat chambers in various types of Moore superlattices. Okay, there was a lot of other work, and soon after, the group of David Goldhaber Gordon at Stanford University investigated magic angle graphene aligned to the hexagonal boronated lattice. Okay, turns out that if you align, then you break a certain symmetries in the system, and you can have a large anomalous Hall effect close to being quantized. A few, 6 months later, the group of Andrea Young at UCSB reported the quantized anomalous Hall effect in this system with a very good quantization. To this day, magic angle twisted bilayer graphene aligned to HBN is the system where the quantum anomalous Hall effect is realized at the highest temperature of any system. Okay. Similar experiments were done in a different Moore system. This one is not twisted, but it's a Moore system, ABC trilayer aligned to HBN, in the group of Feng Wang and also in collaboration with Goldhaber Gordon. Okay, and there were theory papers, etc. So now, one of the latest developments, okay, is that we have discovered now a second robust Moore superconductor, okay, magic angle twisted trilayer graphene. Okay, and there will be plenty more surprises coming soon on this system. I call this Moore Magic 3.0. It's the next generation of Moore quantum systems. Okay, so my group, published in Nature just a few weeks ago. The group at the same, the same week, the group of Philip Kim at Harvard reported essentially very similar results on the same system. This system is extremely tunable. It realizes a strongly coupled superconductivity, even more strongly coupled than the bilayer case, and it's much more tunable, and it has very interesting magnetic field properties. Okay, so you will hear a lot more about this system soon. Now, I hope to have shown you that there's quite a bit of magic in this Moore quantum matter. We can basically realize many of the condensed matter behaviors just using a few simple ingredients like graphene or graphene and hexagonal boronitride or monolayer transition metal like chalcogenides. Okay, we can realize correlated insulators, superconductivity, various topological phases, magnetism, nematicity. Now, can we just keep going and discover everything, all condensed matter physics in these systems? Well, I don't know if all, but certainly a lot of it, okay? And for example, what about a traditional condensed matter behavior such as ferroelectricity. Okay, is there something called Moiré ferroelectricity? Well, as of a couple of months ago, three experimental groups, you know, my group and also the group of Moshe Ben Shalom in Tel Aviv and Manchester group, they reported the realization of Moiré ferroelectricity in bilayer boron nitride. Okay, now what do I want by Moiré ferroelectricity? The name is sort of in the spirit of, you know, Moiré superconductivity. You know, you take graphene, which is not a superconductor, and it's also not an insulator. Okay, if you put them on top of each other, you form a Moiré pattern, and you can have superconductivity or correct insulator behavior. Now we're going to make ferroelectricity out of the non-ferroelectric materials by putting them on top of each other. Okay, so now there, you know, ferroelectricity is, you know, is something which is rare to find in two dimensions. Okay, I believe the materials in this slide are all of the existing two-dimensional ferroelectrics, or, you know, maybe there's, you know, one or two that I'm missing, but similar family. Okay, and all of these two-dimensional ferroelectric materials are essentially obtained by exfoliating bulk polar materials. You know, there is already a material which typically is non-centrosymmetric, which is already ferroelectric in most of the cases, and you exfoliate it and you find, you know, ferroelectricity. Okay, now this is not what I mean by Moiré ferroelectricity in two dimensions. What I mean is making ferroelectricity out of non-ferroelectrics. So, and for that we're going to take, by, you know, hexagonal boron nitride. Okay, now hexagonal boron nitride is a material, you know, which is a honeycomb structure. It's also a two-dimensional material, but you find in the bulk. Okay, and the it's a honeycomb lattice also, where now the A and B atoms are boron and nitrogen. Okay, instead of being the A and B carbon sublattices of graphene, these are now boron and nitrogen alternating. Okay, it's a material that in the bulk has AA prime stacking, meaning all of the, you know, the boron atoms are on top of the nitrogen atoms are on top of the boron atoms, but they are all on top of each other vertically, okay, aligned, the two structures. Okay, so by bulk bilayer hexagonal boron nitride, okay, the natural stacking has the hexagonal boron nitride layer number two rotated by 180 degrees on top of layer number one. Okay, that's why you get the AA prime stacking, where the atoms alternate in the vertical direction. Now, contrast that with something that we can engineer, that we can do in non-equilibrium fabrication of these two-dimensional materials. Let's take a monolayer of boron nitride. I'm gonna put here lines to guide you, your eyes. Now, I'm going to split this monolayer in two, and I'm going to put one part aligned on top of the other at 0 degrees angle, so parallel stack, okay? Now, all the nitrogen atoms are on top of the nitrogen atoms, and the boron are on top of the boron, okay? So parallel stacking has HBN layer number two, non-rotated, meaning 0 degrees, on top of layer number one. And this is now a non-centrosymmetric material. Now, what happens is this is extremely uncomfortable for the system. It doesn't want to have all nitrogen atoms on top of nitrogen and all boron atoms on top of boron. So what the system does is it shifts laterally and it acquires a AB stacked configuration where boron sits on top of nitrogen, or equivalently, okay, or similarly, let's say, a BA stacked configuration where the nitrogen sits on top of the boron. And it turns out these two configurations, which are degenerate in energy, they have opposite electric dipole moments. So if you are able to switch between these two, what you have is a switchable ferroelectric, okay? So indeed, we realized that, okay? So we took monolayer hexagonal boron nitride, split it in two, align it parallel to itself, okay? So we make parallel stack bilayer boron nitride. These are the two green. And we put a graphene, it's the monolayer on top. This is just going to be a sensor to sense the polarization state of our ferroelectric. Then we have thicker hexagonal boron nitride so that we can have outer metal gates that we can apply an electric field in the transverse direction to control the polarization of our ferroelectric, okay? So what we have made is a ferroelectric field effect transistor, you have source and drain, the graphene conducts, but the conduction state of the graphene is going to depend on the polarization of our ferroelectric. And indeed, if we make these structures and we measure the resistivity as a function of electric field, okay, voltage divided by distance, you can see that we have, remember that the response of graphene is V-shaped, the conductance, resistance is one over conductance, so it's this peak, okay? It's like delta function, you know, this Gaussian looking thing. So it's a peak in resistance when you go in one direction, then you sweep your electric field backwards, and this is at a different electric field. The system exhibits hysteresis, okay? That is already telling you that the system is very likely ferroelectric as we design. You can do this continuously in a map of resistivity versus electric field, you know, versus top, you know, versus back gate voltage and top gate voltage, okay? In this system, you can see that this highly resistive tip, as you sweep in a given direction, the system, okay, we're sweeping here like this, and the system switches at this point. If we now sweep our voltages in the opposite direction, the system returns and switches in a different spot. That is the hysteretic behavior. Sometimes, okay, in going between this AB and BA configuration, we can capture a domain wall going through one of our contacts. So we have coexistence of both resistive states here, okay, those two peaks. Now, that thing that I told you was for 0 degree angle. So strictly speaking, you can say, hey, there's no more A there because it's just 0 degrees. You know, you just have this giant ferroelectric switching between these two structures, AB and BA. However, we can do true more ferroelectricity by making a very small angle between the two parallel stack, you know, boron nitride layers, okay? So parallel stacking now forms a lattice, a honeycomb lattice, a Moret pattern, very similar to the one I told you for magic angle graphene, except that now BA and AB domains have actually different electric dipole moments, okay? So if I apply a positive electric field, I increase one domain size compared to the other. If I apply the opposite electric field, I increase the size of the other domain, okay? And indeed, we can do this, okay? This is data now on a small, we have 0.6 degree twisted bilayer boron nitride device. And now you can see that rather than the system abruptly switching, it gradually goes from one resistive state to the other resistive state as you increase, you know, one type, you know, one domain type compared to the other domain type, okay? This you have to compare with when we have 0 degrees, that we have an abrupt switching. Now, okay, I'm telling you all of this and you may be wondering, are you really sure that you have this thing, you know, these ABVA domains and so on? Can you directly image it? Indeed, we can directly image this, okay? We can use a technique called vertical piezoelectric force microscopy. It's a very sensitive technique to detect out of plane electric fields, okay? And if we look at our devices, we see indeed these fantastic honeycomb patterns where, you know, this amplitude and this is phase, and you can see how the electric field, the vertical electric field alternates sign, okay, on our honeycomb plateau. You're directly imaging here, you're directly seeing here our Moret, ferroelectric Moret pattern, okay? Now, this is something that works, it's robust even at room temperature, okay? So bilayer boron nitride is the world's thinnest ferroelectric material, and it works at room temperature, okay? It's the world's thinnest out-of-plane ferroelectric material. You can, you know, measure this polarization, this hysteresis at room temperature, as you can see here. You can flip it thousands of times. You can wait for a month, go back to its state. It retains memory. You know, who knows? Maybe one, this could even be applied in technology. Now, I want to go back to this, okay? I hope to have, you know, convinced you that, you know, this field of correlated Moret heterostructures or Moret quantum matter, you know, really brings together all of these Condes metaphysics community. For me, that's something that one of the most satisfying things of working in this is that I'm interacting so much with people that I didn't talk to that much before, and I'm learning so much, okay? And with this, I want to end by acknowledging, you know, this most important slide in my talk. You know, this work that I showed today was, of course, teamwork, started by my graduate student, Joan Sao, now postdoc, also for some of the data I have shown together with Daniel Rodan and Jane Park. The ferroelectric, VN work was done by Kenji Yasuda, who's a postdoc, and Shuri Wang, who's a grad student. We have lots of collaborators at MIT, Harvard, Weizmann Institute, NIMS Japan. And I want to thank also all the, funding support. And I hope that we get soon back to, having this type of events, And of course, I would love to visit in person the Perimeter Institute. I want to thank you for your attention.
All right. Thank you for that great talk, Pablo. So for starters, are there any student questions? If not, are there any other questions? I have a question, which is just what is the so in the tri-layer superconducting system,
yep.
what is the pattern of twist angles? Did I see correctly that the top and bottom layers are aligned and the middle layer is the one that's twisted?
That's right.
And is so the it's angle
called, it's called a mirror symmetric configuration. Okay. So the top and the bottom layer are exactly aligned with respect to each other, and the middle layer is twisted by an angle which is a square root of 2 times the magic angle for bilayer. Okay, so it's 1.56 degrees. And in this mirror symmetric configuration, it turns out you can think of these three layers as forming, again, bonding, anti-bonding states. And the bonding state results in a magic angle bilayer graphene-like flat band. And the anti-bonding states result in a monolayer massless Dirac band. So the system has a very interesting electronic structure. It has a combination of flat bands and Dirac bands. And that is part of the richness of the system. I think it's a much more interesting system, actually, than the magic angle bilayer.
Yeah. And is that was a magic angle that was, again, predicted ahead of time based on the fact that there are flat bands at that angle?
That's right. Yeah. So the magic angle was predicted, and we make devices at that angle, and we were dead on. So it was a very interesting theoretical prediction
of the
single particle effect. They didn't know exactly strongly coupled superconductivity and all those things, but the single particle effect, that it would be flat bands at that angle, was theoretically predicted. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I see, there's a question in the chat. Maybe this is, how do I see that the flat bands are related to superconductivity, someone asks.
Okay, very good. So in a similar way, as I said, that the correlated insulated behavior is only seen in a narrow angular range around 1.1, same thing occurs with superconductivity, okay? So superconductivity only appears in the system in, for angles, let's say between 0.9 and 1.25 or 1.3 degrees, okay? And it's much stronger around 1.1, between 1 and 1.2 degrees. Some people have shown a few devices with a little bit smaller or larger angle, okay? So the system only has those flat bands around those angles. And that's how we know that the superconductivity is related to the presence of these flat bands.
So experimentally, that's how it's known. And then is it fair to say that theoretically, it's not known why the two are related, or there's a lot of different proposals?
That's true. So theoretically, there are all kinds of proposals. There are a few people that still believe that this may be, the superconductivity may still be due to electron-phonon coupling. Somebody told me, I think it's, if it ends up being conventional superconductivity, this would be the most unconventional conventional superconductor. It's a funny way of saying it. A few people still think that might be the case, although the experiments, they keep building and building and building evidence that this is very hard to actually theoretically come up with, a conventional mechanism that would give you this coupling strength, the characteristics of the superconductivity, etc. And a number of papers have appeared recently saying this is incompatible with conventional mechanisms. A larger fraction of the community thinks that Coulomb interactions play a very substantial role. And then having flat bands, what it tells you is that the kinetic energy of the electrons is quenched, and therefore the relative importance of Coulomb interactions grows, okay? And that's why it is, you know, it makes sense that given that we see superconductivity in this range where we have very narrow, you know, very flat bands, that interactions play a role, you know, because in that, you know, very narrow, for that very narrow flat bands, you have a ratio of interaction energy to kinetic energy, which are of the same order, and they can compete and they can create all kinds of interesting many body states.
Is do people know for you mentioned that for three layers that the right, if you root two times the original magic angle gives the flat band, is the rule known for larger system for general systems, or is it?
Yes. So in the paper, you know, so the paper that proposed this, it was a group of Ashley Viswana at Harvard, Eslam Khalaf, the postdoc who predicted this. They already have calculated the magic angles for any number of layers in this mirror symmetric alternating twist configuration. Mm-hmm. And it turns out it's very interesting because for larger number of layers, so for, you know, for two layers is one magic angle, for there is a first magic angle. Theory also predicts higher order magic angles, but they have not been seen experimentally. And the moment you go to those angles, other effects such as strain and relaxation take over, and it's not clear theoretically that second, third, fourth magic angle are robust. But let's say for bilayer and for trilayer, there's one first magic angle. Turns out, starting from four layers, there are two first magic angles. Okay, for five layers, there are three first magic angles, you know, first order magic angles. So the physics becomes quite rich as you go towards higher number of layers, and you get a dense set of magic angles actually for a very large number of layers. So it's something quite interesting. Of course, fabricating these devices gets exponentially harder with number of layers, as you can imagine. Okay, but I think there's still room to explore. So, you know, I anticipate surprises.
Mm-hmm. Are there any other questions? Jinwoo asks, does it matter if the two layers are exactly parallel?
Very good. Very good question. Indeed, it matters. Okay? Not only parallel, they have to be exactly the atoms on top of each other between the top and the bottom layer in the three-layer stack. It's a configuration called A twisted A, okay? Meaning they have to be exactly aligned. So you may ask, how did you manage to experimentally have them? You know, it's hard enough to get them parallel. How did you get them exactly aligned with each other, right? Well, it turns out nature here was very kind. You know, theorists have already calculated, you know, first principle calculations of what is the most favorable stacking configuration for the bottom and the top layer, given this middle one rotated at that magic angle. And it turns out the lowest energy corresponds to one where this one is exactly aligned with this one, okay? So when you fabricate it, it's going to tend to shift a little bit so that they're exactly aligned on top of each other. That's the energetically most favorable configuration. So I guess we were a little bit of lucky in that sense, because if we are not aligned, okay, then the electronic structure is quite different, and we wouldn't be seeing the data that we see. Again, I invite you to have a look at the paper, but for other configurations, for example, A twisted B, which is another low energy configuration, but not the lowest energy, the electronic structure is completely different. And the behavior when you vary the displacement field. So it was important to be able to, on average, have, you know, these two layers parallel, the bottom and the top.
Thank you.
Eric.
I assume it would be very difficult to build 3D structures out of that. But if you could, then I assume you could build something like atoms or hexagons or whatever the polygons are, polynomial. I'm sorry. You know what I mean. 3D structures. What would happen then?
And so, sorry, what do you mean by building a polygon? Do you mean
at the moment you have hexagons, and the moiré forms larger hexagons, and yes. I think that you stack them up on top of each other, and then you build something like simplices or cubes on top of that, or hexahedral pyramids or something.
Mm-hmm. So if we, you know, all this, you know, as you keep adding layers on top of each other, you would be having more complicated moiré patterns, right? Depending on which angles you have. Okay. Now, people have started, I don't know if your question goes in the following direction. People have started to think, okay, you have flat band in two dimensions when you do this, playing with this Moore pattern. Can you make flat bands in all three dimensions by stacking your layers in a way that it will give you also a flat band in the Z direction once you have a large enough sample that it makes sense to think about the band structure in the vertical direction? And the answer is yes. So this has been also recently theoretically calculated. You can make also 3D flat bands, okay, by appropriately playing with the twist angles to make a three-dimensional structure. So people are, theorists are having a wonderful time. It's much harder for us to realize these things, but I don't have a slide here, but people are making, this is going much beyond quantum materials. The cold atoms community is already calculating what happens with twisted optical lattices for cold atoms. A very interesting physics happens. People are making this with, they call it Moore phononics. You can make this with mechanical elements and make flat bands, with mechanical elements for the phonon dispersions. You can also do this with photonic lattices. They call Moore photonics and twisted photonics. You can, slow light, by making flat bands for light using Moore patterns with photonic crystals. This thing is growing in all directions, and it's quite interesting, actually.
All right, great. Well, if there are no other questions, or even if there are, let me ask that. Say that a different way. Is that we maybe have time for one more question, if there is one. But if it looks like those are all the questions. In that case, let's thank Pablo again for a very exciting talk.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, everyone.